Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
We start with the news breaking Tuesday night. All right, keep that in mind. Tuesday night, Tom Brady was going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And then all day yesterday, all the hype was Tom Brady was going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. But you know what didn't happen? Tom Brady did not become a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. There was no official report of a deal, just a lot of use of the word expected. There was no statement on Instagram from Brady about how much he's looking forward to becoming a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, the same guy who could not wait to update everybody on everything over the course of this embarrassing saga has not said or done anything as it relates to Tampa Bay. All the hype about Tom Brady as a Buccaneer, and Tom Brady is still not quite a Buccaneer. And just in the sense that all free agent signings are going to be tricky right now because of the impact that the coronavirus has had on physicals, but because in this case, both sides are still working to finalize the deal. Apparently that's the case. They're both working on the deal. Because last night, Adam Schefter tweeted, quote, "Bucks and Tom Brady still trying to finalize contract language as of Wednesday night, and those discussions will go into Thursday, per source. Contract language, more challenging this offseason than any time in recent memory. No problems foreseen with Bucks Brady, but no deal yet." End of tweet. So once again, no problems foreseen. However, no contract done either. Initial speculation was the holdup might be due to the physical and the two sides figuring out who was going to be conducting the physical. But that doesn't seem to be the case now that Jeff Darlington has reported that it's not about finding a doctor and that Brady could find one in New York today. So, exactly what is the holdup? Why is this not getting done? What are we waiting on? Let me speculate for a second. Let me speculate and let me hope. Allow me to say this right now. If this is, in fact, some elaborate stunt by Brady and he's going to pull a total reversal, then I will take back anything critical or anything negative that I've ever said about Brady and his corny pub-grabbing act. Because that would be the ultimate move. Do that, and he instantly becomes my favorite NFLer ever. No, my favorite athlete ever. No, my favorite human being ever. Like, generally, I'm not a huge prank guy. But that'd be the best prank ever. If he got everybody to actually believe that he was going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, only to rip the rug on that beleaguered franchise and everybody else, only to show up at a presser with Billy and Bobby and say, "Did you all really think I was going to Tampa Bay? Come on, man. I have as many Super Bowl rings as they have playoff wins. Wake the hell up. The hell would I go to Tampa Bay for?" Or if he just went to his Instagram page and posted the clip of DiCaprio from Wolf of Wall Street.
"I'm not leaving."
If he did that, and this turned out to be nothing more than some elaborate episode of Punk'd, I would be all in on this guy and even the lifestyle. I'd be getting Alex Guerrero to stretch me out. I'd start eating avocado ice cream and believing that drinking a lot of water was actually better protection from the sun than sunblock itself. I would completely abandon every other form of exercise and just go all in on resistance bands. I'd be rocking his recovery jammies, throwing down for his cookbook, not eating tomatoes, looping his old Facebook show 24/7. Be the best thing ever. Getting the entire sporting world to look at him, to work up horrible photoshops of him in Bucks gear, to start game planning for Brady in an offense with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, only to rip the whole thing away. It would be legendary. That would be even more impressive than winning 6 rings. Do that, and then there is no question. Do that, and you are, in fact, the GOAT. And not just in football, but in life. Man, I want that to happen so bad. especially when you have Schefter tweeting other stuff like this. Quote, since word surfaced that Tom Brady is expected to land in Tampa, an unexpected high number of players have reached out to the Buccaneers to let them know they want to join the former Patriots quarterback, per league sources. End of tweet. And they followed that up a little bit later on with a retweet of his own tweet and the addition, this is otherwise known as the NFL version of the LeBron effect. Wait a minute. I thought nobody wanted to play with LeBron. Yeah, you. In terms of Brady, all right, I'll try and follow along here. Like, who are these other guys that are so anxious to play with a 43-year-old man right now? Who are these other guys? Like, I'm not saying the guys wouldn't be interested in playing with Brady in Tampa or wherever he goes, but who are these other players who are calling Tampa Bay? I don't think it's wide receivers. Doubt that. They've already got a pair of 1,000-yard wide receivers. I don't think any high-end free agent wideout is going to say, man, I want to go somewhere where I can be option number three or option number four. So I doubt it's that. Are there tight ends calling? Doubt that. They're pretty solid there. Maybe a running back. They do need help at running back. But then again, knowing the length of an NFL running back's career and the fact that they need to make as much money as they can, as quickly as they can, are free agent running backs looking to take a haircut to make sure they can play with a 43-year-old Tom Brady? Doubt that. So then what? If it's not wide receivers and it's not tight ends and not running backs, then what? Defensive players? I guess maybe. I mean, I know Shaq Barrett was on SiriusXM yesterday talking about his reaction to the Brady speculation.
I was excited. I think he put us like right at the top of anything, and the way we was playing late at the end of the year as a defense, we get like the sky's the limit for us. We should be able to make a lot of noise happen this year.
Look, I understand why he's pumped. He's already in Tampa. But are other defensive players packing their bags and heading straight to Tampa just because Tom Brady might be a Buck? Again, I'm not saying that it's not possible that guys would want to play with him. It makes sense. But unlike the NBA, half the guys on the roster won't actually be playing with Tom Brady. They'll just be wearing the same uniform as Tom Brady. Now, that's not to say that a defense doesn't benefit from Brady. I could see where guys would want to be around him. But if you want a ring, is Tampa the best place to go? If you want to go ring chasing, why wouldn't you be calling Baltimore or Kansas City or San Francisco or New Orleans? Is that tweet a sign of somebody in Brady's camp trying to put public pressure on Tampa Bay to make sure they finish off that deal and give in on whatever stumbling blocks are left? Maybe it's that. Or maybe, and hopefully, they're just setting the stage for the greatest punk job ever, the greatest prank moment of all time. And I hope that's it. I'll tell you what I hope it's not. I hope this has nothing to do with Antonio Brown, because that would be a horrible look for Brady. That would be a horrible look, but you know what would be the best look? If he were to punk the Bucks, the rest of us, and then he goes from being one of the most uninteresting dudes ever to arguably the best dude ever. Do it, Tommy. Do it. Anthony Grant. Anthony, great to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. Good to be back with you, man.
Yeah, so let me ask you. Today would have been the first Thursday of the NCAA tournament, so in all likelihood, you would have either been preparing to play today or tomorrow. So how are you doing? How is your family? How is the program doing right now?
Well, I appreciate it. You know, obviously under the conditions, you know, with COVID-19 and what it's doing nationally, obviously it's affected everything here, not only you know, our team, but, you know, the university, the community. So my family's healthy and safe, and hopefully all our players are with family are safe, and they're doing well. So staff is doing well. So under the circumstances, I think everything is good. And the most important thing is people's safety and health.
If staying on top of your budget and protecting your home are goals for this year, then you want to take a look at American Home Shield. American Home Shield gives you a plan when stuff breaks down in your home. I'm talking about the not so easy to fix, sometimes pretty expensive stuff, like your refrigerator, heating and air conditioning, plumbing and electrical. And believe me, when it happens, not if, but when it happens, you are really going to appreciate American Home Shield. To see all they cover and save $50, you want to go to ahs.com/Rome. That's ahs.com/Rome. If American Home Shield cannot repair the covered item, they'll replace it or offer an alternative solution. As the nation's largest provider, they have paid more in home warranty claims than any other company. That's added up to more than $2 billion in the last 5 years. America's most preferred home warranty, more than 1.8 million customers. Limitations and exclusions do apply. See plan for details. American Home Shield. Be sure with the shield. Anthony Grant joining us. You know, you've been very careful to remind everybody that in the grand scheme of things, when you look at what the world's facing right now, basketball is not the most important thing. That said, Dayton had never had a number one seed before, and that was very likely going to happen this year. And then there was the potential for a really deep run in the NCAA tournament. So how do you go about balancing the joy of what you and the team accomplished, because these are legitimate accomplishments, with the feelings that come with not getting the chance to finish it off?
Yeah, so for me, and the thing I try to tell our guys, you know, obviously that we're not, you know, together as a team right now. We're in different places, but just to try to stay focused on what we did accomplish over the course of the season and be grateful for the 31 games that we got a chance to play and the journey, you know, that we were able to go on from the summer, you know, when this team all got together and their ability to stay connected and care about each other and sacrifice for each other and find joy in each other's success. You know, those are the things to me that really stand out. And hopefully, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, these guys remember the bond they had and what they were able to accomplish. So, you have a choice in terms of how you want to view things. And hopefully we'll choose to be grateful for what we did do as opposed to look and think what we didn't get a chance to do.
We're talking to Anthony Grant. You know, so people really have a good sense as to how special this group was. Going into the year, the expectation outside the locker room was that it would be a good team, but nobody outside that program was predicting a conference championship or an undefeated season. When did you first start to think that this group had something really special within?
Well, I think our guys, you know, all along, if obviously locally here, you know, we knew that the year before we had made strides. You know, we finished, I think, 13-5 in conference play and lost some close games. You know, and this was a three-year process of trying to build a team that could compete for a conference championship and then put ourselves in a position where we could get to the NCAA tournament and feel like we had a chance to advance. So, the year before we had a group sitting out that we felt like once they came online would really impact with the guys that we had returning. You know, so you look at, you know, Obi Top in his freshman year, he got freshman of the year in the conference and was first team all league, and Jalen Crutcher, you know, continued to progress and become one of the best guards in the league, and we felt like going into his junior year he could establish himself. And then some other pieces with Trey Landers and Ryan Mikesell and Dwayne Cohill, those guys, you know, the experience they got, you add that to a group that we felt like, you know, having a chance to see them every day in practice and them being able to learn our system and our terminology and what was needed, we felt like we had a team that could compete for a championship and do some special things.
Dayton head basketball coach Anthony Grant, my guest. I'm glad you mentioned them. I was going to actually ask you about every one of them individually, but when you talk about Obi, before coming back to Dayton, you were in the NBA with Billy Donovan and the Thunder. Having been around the NBA game, if there comes a time when he does decide to take the next step, how does Toppin's game translate to the next level?
Well, I think you look at his size, his skill set, his athleticism, and that jumps out at you anytime you watch him play. But as a coach, what I appreciate is his basketball IQ, you know, and the way he continues to get better. And then also, you know, what you don't see every day is he's a guy that has joy playing the game, whether it's, you know, in front of thousands of people or just out competing against his teammates in practice. He loves the game. So, you know, I think, you know, you put those things together and, you know, what he's able to do with his talent and size, I think it translates really well to the next level, because at that level you have some of the best athletes in the world and also the brightest brightest minds, you know, in terms of their basketball IQ. And I think he fits that mold in terms of what they're looking for.
Anthony Grant joining us. What about coaching at that next level? For instance, how different are you as a head coach after spending that time in the NBA? What was your biggest takeaway from that experience?
Yeah, like I say this a lot, you know, you're kind of a sum of all your experiences. So obviously for me, being 2 years in the NBA, I hope I was able to learn and grow as a coach. And, you know, in the years that I spent in college, hopefully I was able to take some things away from the people I had a chance to be around, from, you know, obviously, you know, my high school coach and my college coach, and, you know, being with Billy Donovan for as long as I was, and then obviously having some assistants that are, you know, most of them are now head coaches, and just learning and trying to grow as a, like everybody else in terms of what you do. Hopefully all those experiences, you know, make you better. But, you know, the most important thing is you got to have, you know, good players that buy into what you're doing. So I credit our staff here and the players that we have for the year that we had, you know, because obviously those guys are the ones that went out and got it done. You know, my job is to try to put them in position to be successful, and then they got to go out and accomplish it. So all the credit belongs to our players, our staff, you know, our support people that did an outstanding job in helping us accomplish some great things this year.
Dayton head basketball coach Anthony Grant joining me for a few more moments. So, of course, you were part of that Elite Eight team back when you played, and that's a team that has a legacy at Dayton in the future. And you mentioned this, like, you have these conversations with your players and what they'll look back on 10, 20 years from now. In the future, when people do look back on this 2019-2020 Dayton Flyers team, what should they remember?
Well, obviously, you know, we're in unprecedented times with, you know, the COVID-19 virus. So I think it's premature to really say what will be remembered by this. I think this is still kind of a work in progress. And, you know, first and foremost, I want to encourage everybody to continue to stay safe and do the things that our leaders are telling us we need to do to stay safe. But hopefully when it all settles, we'll remember, you know, in this shortened season, you know, the things that we did accomplish, you know, being able to go 18-0 in conference play, and, you know, 20-game winning streak, and, you know, finishing the final poll ranked in the top five in the country. You know, those are accomplishments that, you know, maybe not everything that we wanted to accomplish, but certainly within their own right, worth remembering. And I think this team, for the way they represented this university, the community, just the Dayton community, I think will go down as one of the more memorable teams in a very, very long and storied history of Dayton Flyer basketball.
It's an amazing season. Dayton 29-2, number 3 in both polls. Anthony Grant led them to an undefeated season in A-10 conference play, and in his third season there. Coach, great to have you back. I really appreciate your time and your thoughts on this. Hope we can do it again soon.
My pleasure, Jim. You guys stay safe.
Lou in Iowa. What's going on, Lou? How are you?
Hey, Rome, doing well. How about yourself?
I'm great. Thanks. What's up?
Yeah, man, I just wanted to mention that why is it that the Bears can never, ever, ever, ever get a good quarterback? I mean, they had Brady out there. They had Rivers out there. And who are they talking to? They're talking to Mariota and Nick Foles. I mean, two guys who have – I mean, Nick Foles got lucky as all get out winning the Super Bowl, you know? But it's just – It's part of the Bears culture, I guess. I mean, they take guys like Rex Grossman, Danny Warfel, you know, all guys are supposed to be awesome college players, and they get to us, and they're horrible. I mean, I bet if we got Brady, he'd come to us, and he'd become Jameis Winston, probably, just because we can't get it done.
My man, rack him. Good job, Lou. Really well done. It's always something in Chicago with the quarterback. Unless it's Jim McMahon or Cuddy, it's always something. Or Bobby Douglas. It's always something with Chicago and the quarterback. And now especially. I mean, do you remember when the Bears were going to win the NFC North last year and compete for the Super Bowl? Do you remember when Mitchell Trubisky was going to break out and make a run at the MVP? I can remember this one idiot calling me over and over again on this show going, hey, Rome, what do you got to say about Trubisky now? You want to take back everything you said about Trubisky when they drafted him? What do you have to say now? What do I have to say now? I was right. Look, I know that our perception of time is really warped of late. And it's still hard to imagine that it's only been a week. It was a week ago today that I was on the air talking about Rudy Gobert testing positive and the NBA suspending play. But there really was a time when Bears fans were talking about winning that division and going to the Super Bowl. That was a thing. And that time was roughly 9 months ago. But it feels like ancient history, doesn't it, Bears fan? After all, you already had an elite defense. Mitch Trubisky had taken a step forward in 2018. And let's face it, the only reason that you didn't win a Super Bowl that year was because of this.
For the lead, ball put down, right-footed kick is up, end over end. And now he hit the crossbar! After he hit the upright, he hit the upright again! He's done it all season long!
The old double doink. Yeah, that was the reason, right? That was the only reason Chicago did not end the 18 season with a ring. Never mind that the offense had serious issues in that game and could barely move the ball at home. It was really all about the kicker and the double doink, which is why Matt Nagy reportedly went on that bizarre, obsessive quest for a kicker that offseason. Because allegedly, that was the only reason they didn't win at all. That was the missing piece. As it turns out, that was all wrong. Turns out it wasn't only about the kicker. Turns out trading up to draft Mitchell Trubisky ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes was actually not a good idea. And it turns out that not only is Mitchell Trubisky not an MVP candidate, not a face of the franchise, he may not even be an NFL starter. Because yesterday, the Bears traded the 140th pick to the draft, in the draft, to Jacksonville for Nick Foles. All right, so then, if you're that Bears fan right there, and probably a lot of them, what you're saying is, that's fine, Rome. Trubisky's not the answer. Our problem is not that they're giving up on him. It's that they're bringing in Nick Foles when there are so many other guys out there. Well, you know why that is, right? Coaches bring in guys that they're familiar with. Foles has worked with Nagy and that staff before. And he renegotiated his salary. And when Nick Foles is good, he's really good. Like, I take exception to what that caller said, that he, quote, lucked his way to a Super Bowl. You can't luck your way to a Super Bowl. When this guy's good, he's really good. Now, that's not to say that Nick Foles is going to lead them to a Super Bowl, even though he's done that in the past. When he's good, he's really good. But when he's not, he's not. I mean, after all, he is a guy who lost his starting job to a rookie who was taken in the sixth round. So what I'm saying is you really don't know what you're getting in Nick Foles. Is he better than Cam Newton? Another option of free agency? Tough to say. But the easy, obvious thing to say is they had to do something. What they couldn't do was just run that thing back. But again, the Nick Foles trade is not about Nick Foles. Just like overpaying Mike Glennon was not about Mike Glennon. It was about Trubisky and the fact that he may not have a job pretty soon. That is an all-time incredible fall from grace. To go from the second pick overall, again, they jumped over Mahomes and Watson to get this guy. To go from the second pick overall and an MVP candidate to a potential backup in a matter of months. Going from the face of the franchise to a guy running around the facility, turning off TVs so nobody would say anything bad about him. You know, and then there are those stops along the way when people would say things like, hey, it's fine, he's great, he's still the guy, it's just his health, or just a few tweaks in his footwork, or just a different coach. Never mind that the one he had won Coach of the Year a few months earlier. Never mind that a few months earlier, everybody thought they were going, or the fans thought, they were going to the Super Bowl. Lots of excuses, lots of explanations, and now the team is just saying, screw it. We need a different quarterback. And no, they're not bringing this guy in to mentor him. They're not bringing this guy in to push him. They're bringing this guy in to replace him. Better hope so. Because this would look like it's the last throw of the dice for the GM, Ryan Pace. It's either get lucky with Foles and catch lightning in a bottle again, or get some kind of miracle Hail Mary from Trubisky, or get packing and hit the bricks. Because Chicago's issues are not just Trubisky. And Ryan Pace has made some really weird moves. Drafting Leonard Floyd with the 9th pick in 2016, bust, released on Tuesday. How about tight end Adam Shaheen out of Ashland College in the second round in 2017? 9 receptions last season. Trey Burton, flop. And what's the solution? Jimmy Graham, who is a major disappointment for the Packers, a team that was desperate for a second option. I mean, there was a time when Graham was unbelievable, and that time was 2014. And if Jimmy Graham was not putting up numbers with Aaron Rodgers, the hell is he going to do with Mitchell Trubisky? I can go on and on and on. Here's the sad, painful truth, Bears fan. There is no move that can be made that can undo trading up for Mitchell Trubisky when Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were available. Mahomes? You can never live down the shame of that. Trading Babe Ruth and drafting Sam Bowie. Cannot believe how terrible that move was. And trust me, believe this, trading for Nick Foles is not going to make that right. They had to do something. They couldn't stand Pat with Trubisky and hope things got better. But no credit for admitting your mistakes well after everybody saw them. Because you know what's better than admitting your mistakes? Not making them in the first place. And then not making them time and time and time again. So have fun with that. That Bears fan who called up and said, what the hell is it with us and quarterbacks? Great question. He is Tony Jefferson. Tony, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Back on the market, Jim.
My man, good to have you back in the market. All right, so listen, there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about because you've always been a guy that I like to talk with, but because there's so much happening in the NFL, we'll get to that. But before that, the biggest news of all, Tony, in February, you welcomed twin girls to the world. What has that been like so far?
It has been a wild ride. Forgot what the word sleep means, but you know, it's all love, man. It's two wonderful girls, Jayla and Alea. And I mean, it's one of those things where you never thought would happen to you, and it happens, and it's one of the biggest, best blessings in your life.
Good for you. That's beautiful. Tony Jefferson joining us. And then on top of that, you've been working on a vegan challenge. I'm curious, what inspired that decision, and how's that gone so far?
It's been pretty good, bro. For me, I like to challenge. Pretty much challenge myself sometimes, challenge my mental. And I think, you know, just doing a 30-day, changing up your diet to a complete different, something you've never done before, would pose a challenge to not just my body, but mentally, you know. And I always just try to find ways where I could mentally get tougher. And, you know, and I think doing that while I'm working out, getting back on my feet, started running last week, so... you know, as I'm getting back on my feet, I want to be a little lighter and you know, a little fresher. So it's been going good. It sucks. You know, my wife has me go get food, and I got to smell it in the car while I bring it back to him. But I'm holding strong.
Talking to Tony Jefferson, I mean, it's challenging. I love that part, though, about how you're always trying to look for that edge, always looking to try to get mentally tougher. Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. Like, how do you enhance mental toughness? How do you get mentally tougher?
I think it's different for everybody.
Right.
But I can speak for me. The way I get mentally tougher is I just learn from not only my mistakes, but just what's happened to me in life. Just thinking about football, I don't think going undrafted was a mistake, but it happened. And I think it's made me a better ball player. It's made me more attentive to what I'm doing. Made me more focused on my job, and stuff like that. That just happens in life. I think how you respond to them can build you up in many ways, not only just mentally.
Tony Jefferson's joining us. Now, you mentioned that you've been running and started to run. You suffered that season-ending knee injury in week 5. How have you gone about approaching the rehab process, both from a mental and a physical standpoint? What's that been like?
Oh, well, mentally, it was rough. You know, I got hurt week 5 against the Steelers. And then the weeks go on, and we don't lose very much games. We end up going 12-4. So, you know, you sit back and you're watching that. That's tough. But being around the facility and being around the guys and then seeing the success, that's even tougher. So, the whole time I'm doing it, it's mentally tough on me, but I already know what I know the outcome is going to be. You know, I knew I'm not oblivious to what the future was going to hold. I probably knew I was getting released. So my mind mentally just went to get healthy. That's all my mind went to, and that's all I've been stuck to right now. Like I said, I'm just trying to mentally just get myself back in the game. So
Tony Jefferson's my guest. I want to be very clear about this. When you talk about how mentally it's hard because you're just doing the work and they're winning and it's hard to watch, it's because, like, dude, there's nothing but love. I mean, you love your guys. It's hard because you're missing out on something amazing, right? Like, you so badly want to be out there doing the work, paying the price and being a part of it, and you're not. That's the hardest part, right?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, that goes without saying. My guys know it was all love. I was there every step of the way. I could have left and went home and got rehab, but I stayed there because I wanted to be with them. I didn't want to – those are my guys, you know. We trained the hardest with each other. Like, it's a brotherly thing, and I knew I just couldn't leave my brothers like that, so I stayed. You know, it's all love, seeing that happy for them.
For sure. Tony Jefferson joining us. Like, the business aspect, you mentioned – that, you know, I knew this was a possibility. I knew it was probably going to happen. They announced they were releasing you, and you know it's a business. You've seen it happen to your brothers, and you know it's something that could happen, maybe possibly was going to happen. But when it does happen then, and it's real, what's that feel like?
It strikes a fire immediately.
Okay.
I mean, because it happens, and then once it happens, it's everywhere. So, I mean, you're going to hear about it, and Here comes all the family and the friends. You know, you got the friends who send you, "Oh man, I hope everything turns out," you know, but really they're happy. You know, that happens to you. So you shrug it off. And like I said, this is all a mental game for me. So just kept moving forward.
I know you got to be thinking like, "Hey man, it's good. I mean, it's not ideal, but it's good. I got this. But then the phone's just blowing up and you got to respond. You know, you and I have talked about how much fun you had playing in Baltimore. And time again, guys come on the show and they talk about how much they love playing in that city. And for those fans in particular, I know that you're going to move on to the next thing, but you had great times there. You played great ball there. What is it about that town that makes it special?
Just everything. They call it Charm City for a reason. I mean, those fans deserve every successful season given to them. They are loyal, and they're always. I mean, man, they're there when they are not there, and it. If you're not playing well, they will let you know. And if you're playing well, that's what you should have been doing. And it's a blue collar city, and I think, like I said, that successful season they had last year. I know it didn't end the way they wanted to, but the support they showed throughout the season, even though we started off pretty slow, you just got to love the loyalty they bring.
Tony Jefferson's my guest. I want to reference something you did that's, I think, pretty amazing. When you were hurt, Chuck Clark filled in for you. He played well. He signed an extension. And when that was announced, you tweeted, quote, "Well-deserved, my boy. Congrats to you and the fam. You getting dinner when you come to Cali, bro. You earned every penny," end quote. You know, to me, Tony, that's a really classy gesture. Most guys in your situation would not do that. Why was that important for you to do?
I've been in his situation before. I've been in his exact same shoes. You know, when I was in Arizona, got my opportunity by injury, and certain guys handle it different ways. And when you look at a guy like Chuck Clark, smart, and communicates well, gets guys lined up, but he was never a problem, or, you know, you never had to tell that guy anything. He always kept his head down. And he waited his turn, and you just respect guys who do it the right way, and I have the utmost respect for him as always, and that's a bond that'll be forever between us.
Talking to Tony Jefferson, speaking of Arizona, I got to get your reaction. When you saw DeAndre Hopkins traded to the Cards. What did you, I mean, what did you think about that? And how do you like the way he fits in with Kyler Murray and Larry Fitzgerald?
Yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, all right, they traded it. I don't think I was as surprised about the trade as I was about the details of the trade. That was the most shocking part to me because I just know as a defensive player, when we're game planning for a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, he demands so much attention. So in my eyes, I'm thinking he's, as he is, a top receiver in the league, and I would think he would get dealt more than what it was. But, hey, that is a great move by the Cardinals. I think him going there with Larry and Kirk and Drake back there, Kyler Murray really has the opportunity to kind of make it look like how he was at OU.
We're talking to Tony Jefferson. Okay, so what did you think when you first saw reports that Tom Brady was expected to go to Tampa Bay?
Well, for me personally, I saw a lot of rumblings and where he could go. And once I saw the Buccaneers are interested in being that I was with BA for 4 years in Arizona, it's hard not to want to play for that guy. If they had any type of meetings or if they have any type of background together, I'm not sure. But I know you get an opportunity to want to play for BA, you don't want to pass that up.
Tony, let me ask you about one more DB, if you don't mind. Darius Slay. Like, I love Slay. I love his game. I love his attitude. I love his swagger. And you see this move where he goes to Philadelphia, and the analytics crew, and I like analytics, and I respect it, and I appreciate it, but he does not score really high marks with them. As a guy who plays in the defensive backfield, you watch a lot of tape, a lot of film. What do you think about Darius Slay? How good of a player is he?
He's top five in the league for sure, 100%. For me, if you're a top quarter, you have to follow the top receiver every game. And, you know, I've been a part of that a lot. So if you don't, to me, if you don't follow the number one receiver, you're not the top corner to me. But Slay does it, and he does it well. Quick feet, love his game. I honestly think he's worth every penny that he just got, too. So. You know, I'm happy for him, too.
All right, so you got a ton of football ahead of you, but you got with my guy Jason Lockenfora on his radio program recently, and one of the things that you guys talked about was this notion that somewhere down the road, when your playing career is done, you might be interested in getting into scouting or the front office. I listened to you break down these guys, and I could see where you could do that and be really good at it. What is it about that appeals to you?
Funny story, just I've always just been the type of guy who just I would say I have an eye for it. I just remember I moved into a new city and football wasn't really big in that city, and I just started up a Pop Warner team, and I kind of like was the new guy, and I went to the middle schools, and there was more Hispanic than anything, and not many of them had played football, so I kind of just would be out at lunch and we'd be playing, and I'd invite him out to go sign up for football. And before you know it, I had about 12 guys out there, most of them who were 6 foot in the seventh grade, so I could get them on the old line because I played running back. Yeah. But it was just something. And even then, I was like, man, I think I could probably do something with this later. And I just enjoy doing it. All my buddies know that are my teammates now, they would hit me up and be like, hey, what do you think of this guy out of blah, blah, blah. So it's just something, you know, I know when I'm done, I strictly want to be stuck with the football job with me. So,
dude, you should. You were building teams in seventh grade already, so you should. All right, so now you're a free agent. How are you approaching your own free agency?
Well, for me, it's a little different because I'm injured right now. I wouldn't physically pass, but, you know, I'm just worried about getting healthy. I know we've gotten a bunch of calls and stuff, but with the virus, can't really go and get checked up right now. So we're kind of waiting to see how we can move around and work around that. But other than that, like I said, I'm just getting healthy right now, watching everybody else get paid, watching my brothers get paid around the league, enjoying it with them.
I like that. I appreciate that. And I know one more thing you've been doing. You've been taking in some old NBA games, old school NBA games. Who have you been watching?
Well, I just
I just had to watch the Game 7 finals with Cavs versus the Warriors. And, man, that game was just I was actually at that game. So just rewatching it for the first time was pretty surreal, just going back to those moments.
Hey, Tony, what's more amazing to you? The way, like, Steph comes in and kind of revolutionizes the game and gets everybody to rethink it and comes at it a different way. What's more impactful to you or more impressive, him doing that or LeBron doing what he's doing at age 35?
LeBron.
Yeah. What do you think LeBron. When you see that?
I'm just watching him this year. I'm like, this is insane. I don't know. He looks faster. He looks more fluid, and it's crazy.
I mean, dude, as somebody who's thinking about his mind and body the way you do all the time, what is that? Was it just the time he had off last year and he rejuvenated? I mean, how do you get better and faster? I don't want to say more explosive or more athletic, but he looks to me like he's playing as well as he ever has at 35. What is the explanation?
I would have to, for if it was me, I would say it was some mental, more mental, mind over matter. He took the criticism that he got that year, went, got to work, and just went out and did his thing. So I think he just mentally prepared himself to get ready for a season that he's having, right, which I think is the MVP season.
You would give him the MVP?
Yeah.
Entering his eighth NFL season, undrafted out of Oklahoma, the pride of Eastlake High School in Chula Vista. He is a free agent safety, good friend of the program. He is Tony Jefferson. Tony, it's good to get caught up with you, man. I appreciate you. I always appreciate our conversations. Good to have you back.
Always, bro. Thank you.
Meanwhile, Philadelphia is the defending champ. They went out and they added Javon Hargrave from Pittsburgh and Darius Slay. As Daniel Jeremiah talked about earlier this week, loading up on the defensive line is where it's at right now in the NFL. And the Eagles are loaded there. And now you've got that beast up front. And you've got big play Slay in the back. Now you've got that, go ahead and forget about it. The official details of the trade are as follows. Darius Slay to Philly in exchange for the 85th pick and the 116th pick overall in the draft. And at the completion of the trade, Slay and the Eagles are expected to agree on a 3-year extension worth $50 million, 30 of it guaranteed. My take is, great, great move for Philadelphia. Such a good move. Their secondary was a bit of an issue last year. Hell, you could see that in the first half of the first game when Case Keenum was lighting them up. And there are a few better ways to address that by bringing in Darius Slay. Now, hear this about Darius Slay. Just because you might not know a ton about him does not mean that he's not good. Does not mean that he's not very good. It simply means he's been playing in Detroit. And I hate to say it, Detroit, because you know how much I love you. You know how much you mean to the program. I'm even on record as saying, and it sounds really counterintuitive, but I'm on record as saying that that's actually a damn good football town. And by what I mean, or what I mean by that is, they love it. They love football. They so badly want a winner. So I hate to say what I'm about to say, but lately, playing in Detroit has meant playing in football Siberia. That's why you don't know that much about Darius Slay. But those who know, know. And just because Slay was off the football mat does not mean that he's not a stud, because he is. An all-pro, a 3-time Pro Bowl selection. He's got game, and he's got the personality and the swagger to back it up. This was Darius Slay on our program, on Radio Row, talking about what it was like to go up against Phillip Rivers.
We walking through the tunnel. I'm just minding my business, dapping up my teammates. I heard him yell out my name, Slay. In the tunnel. So I turn around, and he's like, yeah, early and often, Slay, early and often. I said, oh, no. So I went to my one of my safeties, Quandre Diggs. I'm like, hey, man, we got to go right now. He done talked to crazy, and we got to get right. It made me laugh because the fact that how he said
it. You got to respect that, man.
I respect it the best because he wants you to bring your best out of you. So he trying to mess with your mind a little bit. But for him not to cuss and say it, it was making it even funnier because I probably would have cussed.
But he doesn't, though.
He doesn't. That's what makes it funny. That's making it so funny.
That's so funny that he could talk that kind of junk without cussing.
Yes, he talked a lot of it.
Every play.
Keenan caught a pass on me. And now, you know, he driving down the field, walking down. I'm just getting up, walking. I heard him say, yeah, early. Yeah, I told you. Yeah. Like, I was like, ooh-wee.
You can tell me you don't want that guy in your locker room. Things that come back to mind, whenever I play some of that sound from Radio Row, I have to laugh at how sick I sound. Man, I sound weak. But Darius Slay, what a personality. And that story about Philip Rivers finding him, coming out onto the field and saying, hey, Slay, early and often, Slay, early and often.
Told ya.
That's how much Philip Rivers loves it. And I love Darius Slay's point that what made it even better, he can talk that kind of junk without cussing. Early and often. So are you going to tell me that you don't want that guy in your locker room and on your team? Because I do. But apparently, the Lions did not. Apparently, they did not want to pay him what he was going to be worth. And once that was clear, Slay wanted out and made it clear. Understandably. Like yesterday, this is great. Adam Schefter tweeted that Detroit signed former Falcons corner Desmond Trufant. Slay retweeted it and commented with this, quote, congrats to my guy, ! Congrats to my guy. Hope that speeds up my trade process. That is awesome. Like, congrats on coming here, my guy. Now maybe I can get the hell out of here. And Slay was not done. A beat writer for M Live tweeted, Darius Slay and Desmond Trufant would be a fun tandem to watch, but I just don't see it happening. The Lions want to deal Slay. Slay retweeted that with, quote, they need to hurry it up. Like, I've never seen a guy so eager to get out of town. He was practically engineering the trade himself. And here's the other thing with Slay. He's not exactly a darling of the analytics crowd. PFF tweeted this morning, quote, Darius Slay, PFF, coverage grade of 77 plus in four of the fast five seasons. So I like PFF. I read them. I like them. I respect them. They don't seem to respect Darius or his game very much. And then you got other guys jumping in. Tyrann Mathieu saw that. Tyrann Mathieu saw it and said, quote, sorry, my guys. He is not the 83rd best CB. That's a lie that some will believe. Hashtag, watch the tape. He play man-to-man every down, even when he shouldn't. He manned up. Tough duty. Only 1% of the works can do. Joe Hayden, another guy I respect a lot, saw that PFF tweet too. He also jumped in. Hayden said, quote, this is just stupid. All I do is watch wide receiver and cornerback tape. In my humble opinion, Slay is top five easily. It's a different world playing press on a team's number one wideout each week. Bag man. Deion Sanders even jumped in. Deion Sanders tweeted that Slay, quote, is a grown man out there on that island. He matches up with the opposing team's number one receiver and competes each and every play. That boy makes plays, and I approve this corner. Hashtag truth. So what you got right there is game respecting game. We're talking about guys who know the position, talking about the position, and paying their respect to big play Slay. You may not know how good this guy is, but people who matter do. His peers do. And you're about to find out. When the details of the contract came out, Tyrann was back. Quote, Slay just got a nice deal. He did. He did get a nice deal. And he got his wish. He got his wish, he got a nice deal, and he could not have ended up in a better spot than Philly. Now he's going to be on the big stage. Now he's going to be in playoff games. Now he's going to get a chance to show the world just how good he is. Big play Slay just had himself a big freaking day. And he earned it. All of it. And one more thought about stat guy or analytics guy. I feel you. I completely respect your approach. I love your work. I read it. I know it. I like it. I really do. But sometimes, just sometimes, it does not tell the entire story. Or maybe we're looking at the wrong stat. The Detroit Lions were tied for second to last in 2019 with 28 total sacks. Common sense would indicate to me that that doesn't take pressure off the back end. Hell, Darius's entire stay in the Motor City, I can't really think of a feared Detroit Lions pass rush at any time. My man, Big Play Slay, can play ball. This guy's out there by himself, and they've got no pass rush whatsoever. Put some respect on this guy's name and change your formula in your calculator if your calculator is telling us that he's the 83rd best cornerback, because he is top five.
Nerd!
It's wrong, nerds.
Nerd!
That part of it is.
Nerd!
But don't take my word for it. Take the word of those who know. Tyrann Mathieu, Joe Hayden, Dion even.
Told ya.
My guest is Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan, good to have you back. How are you?
How you doing, Jim? It's a pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you back. Thanks so much, Jonathan. I'm great. So back in January, you made the decision to enter the draft. Can you take me back to that process? What kind of conversations did you have with the people around you at that time? And ultimately, what led to your decision?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is when you're making that decision, you want to kind of go by a few logistics as far as what do you have left to accomplish on the field? What do you want to showcase? What do you want to prove on the field? Then you have to look at the classroom. You know, how far are you away from graduating? Are you close? Are you far away? You know, you kind of look at those logistics, and then you look at, you know, the timing as far as, you know, kind of what are the scouts saying? What are you projected to go? And if all three of those things align in your favor, then you kind of think, okay, this might be, you know, a great opportunity for me. So those are the things that I really looked at as far as making that decision.
You know, I'd go even a step further when I hear what you're saying, but I would argue that not only did you have nothing else to prove, but you put together one of the greatest college careers that a running back has ever had. When you run down some of the accomplishments, again, more than 6,000 yards in only three seasons, two-time Doak Walker Award winner. When you look at these things, what does that all mean to you, and how much pride do you have in the fact that you were able to do that at Wisconsin?
It's an honor. When I look at all of those accolades, it's really an honor. And you think about it, walking into the running back meeting room premier, and you see all those guys on the All-American wall, NFL wall, and they kind of set the bar and they put a challenge up and saying, hey, the next group of guys in this room, try and beat this. So it's an honor to carry on that tradition and raise that bar. And then I can't wait for the next group of guys in that room who go and break the bar and set it even higher, because that's just all you want. It's a fraternity when you walk into the University of Wisconsin as a running back, and you just want to see the next group of guys do well, so you try to push them as much as you can.
Jonathan Taylor is joining us. You know, you're so process-oriented. I'm really curious how you prepared for the combine. For instance, how much of that preparation was about doing actual football work, and how much of it was just about preparing for the actual drills?
So I think the biggest thing, you know, football comes naturally. You know, for a lot of guys, it's still football. So a lot of the portion was really focusing on the drills, because a lot of the drills are technique oriented. It's not about, like, for example, the 40. It's not about being super fast. Of course, there's a lot of guys who are naturally super fast, but a lot of guys improve their time simply off of technique. Same thing with the shuttle. Same thing with the broad and the vert. Everything is technique based. So it's just working on that technique, and then when it's time to hit the field to do position work and to prepare for that, you're locked in already just because you're a football player.
Jonathan Taylor joining us. So if you're looking to be as close to perfect or perfect in the drills, and it's so much about technique, I'm kind of curious, as you got ready for that, what was a normal day of training and preparation like for you prior to the combine?
So for me, I would get up around 7 o'clock, 6:45, get ready, head over to Exos. We're starting at 8 o'clock. So usually have a speed session and a lift session twice a day. And in the morning, the speed session would be an hour, the lift would be half an hour. You have lunch, you have a break, then you come back in the afternoon, the speed session is half an hour, the lift is an hour, And then, of course, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, in between those two sets of sessions, you have position work. So there were some days you were working out five times a day. And, you know, it's just all trying to prepare for that moment to take advantage of it.
That's no joke. So what about that moment? Then you show up in Indy. You run a 4.39.40. You join Saquon Barkley as one of just two running backs since 2014 to go sub 4.4 at 225 pounds or more. When you've put in that work that you just laid out for us, five workouts a day in some cases, how pleased were you to have that kind of performance when it mattered most?
I was very pleased. Like you said, when it mattered most, a lot of people do a lot of training, and you know, it's one thing to do a lot of training, and it's another thing to actually put it all together when it counts. It's like having a week of practice and then not playing well in the game. So you're always pleased when your work comes to fruition on the field, and I think that was just something you had to take a deep breath before each drill and just remember the technique, things you've been working on for 8 weeks, and then they cut it loose.
Jonathan Taylor is joining us. And then after that happened, Jonathan Maurice Jones-Drew said of you, quote, he's smooth, reminds me of Ezekiel Elliott, end quote. LaDainian Tomlinson was hyping your form in the 40 at the Combine. Barry Sanders tweeted simply, quote, speedy. I mean, Jonathan, these are the best of the best, elite names. What's your reaction when you hear guys like MJD, LT, and Barry, guys who've been in the league, talking about you like that?
It's wild, and you know, you just can't but be thankful and grateful that these guys are kind of admiring your game. They're admiring your skill set, and these are guys that growing up you looked up to and tried to model your game and your skill set after, because they were able to be on the field and have success, and you wanted to make sure that you were doing everything in your power to kind of follow in those footsteps, because you know you want to be one of the best running backs, you know, that there was, just like they were. So I think it's just an honor to have those guys admire my game and skill set.
Jonathan Taylor talking about his preparation for the upcoming NFL draft. Now, this is another guy. I know you're a big fan of Arian Foster, which I really like hearing, because this right here is a big Arian Foster house. I love this guy. I always loved watching him play. I love the way he approached things. I love the way he thinks. For you, what is it about Arian and his game that you like and respect?
So one of the biggest things is Arian Foster was a bigger back. But everything he did on the field was smooth and looked like it came naturally. I mean, in and out his cuts, it was seamless. When he got out in the open field, it was smooth. His stride, knee lift, I mean, everything looked like it was so natural for his size. You would think for his size, he'd be looking like more of an aggressive runner, running down, hard working. But everything he did was so smooth. And, you know, that's kind of how I wanted to be on the field was. Everything it looked like I did was smooth and natural.
Yeah, right? Like a big back like Derrick Henry. Like when he starts running downhill, look out, man. Look out. But Arian, man, he was like floating. Arian was like just floating. He's so smooth. Now, at your pro day, you talked about the fact that you wanted to show everybody you are a natural pass catcher. Why was that something that was so important to you, and do you feel like you were able to accomplish that?
Yeah, that was important to me just because when you think of Wisconsin football, you think of power schemes, gap schemes, some zone. You don't really think of, you know, getting the back out in space and, you know, let him use his ability to catch the ball. And shout out to Coach Chris because he made it a conscious effort to put that in the scheme this year to kind of compliment me and showcase that ability because he knew I had it. So, you know, it was only one season of doing that. I think we did a good job with that this year. But, you know, that's just another thing to check the box. Scouts definitely wanted to see, you know, more of me catching the ball, even though because I only had 1 year of doing so on the field. And I think that's just something that we did a good job at Pro Day. I'm really, really happy with the performance there. And, you know, that's just something that I'm going to continue to work on, though, just to continue to prove that just because of the scheme that I come from.
Jonathan Taylor joins me for a couple of more moments. Now, when you were at the Combine, you said what separates the great backs from the elite backs is them being able to play on an elite level day in and day out. I'm kind of curious, how do you personally go about making sure that you're able to be elite every single day? Is it more about the physical side, or is it a mental kind of a mindset that you have to approach it with?
So they kind of play hand in hand. You always have to be prepared, because if you're not prepared, then your opponent is going to come out with a scheme that you haven't seen before on film, and you won't know how to kind of adjust to it until you go in at halftime and really think about it. So you always have to go in prepared, know your opponent inside and out, and be ready for anything they throw at you. And then another part is the physical part. And for me, I think it was the recovery side. As far as being able to recover strictly after games, being able to stretch, cold tub, within 5 minutes of getting into that locker room after a game, because you know that you have to be prepared next week for another game that's going to be, you know, a real physical game. So I think that's the biggest thing, is understanding that you need to be mentally prepared, but you also need to make sure your body is physically prepared each and every single week in order to play at a high level.
Hey, Jonathan, you know that whole thing about if you want to be successful, you have to be willing to do the things that other people are unwilling to do? At that elite, elite level, are elite athletes all essentially doing the same things, or can you still get an edge? Can you still find yourself doing things that other elite athletes, and I mean obviously things that are within reason and honorable, but can you do things? Do you do things, do you feel like, that others are not willing to do to get an edge?
Yes, without a doubt. There are a lot of things that I like to do, especially during the summer. I would try to go and take hot yoga classes at least 3 times a week during the season. Of course, with the busy schedule in school, I would try to take hot yoga classes, if not twice, at least once a week in order to add more recovery to my body. And I think the biggest thing is finding your edge. What helps you get to that high level and being able to maintain there? So you need to find whatever you can in order to stay at that level and maintain it throughout the entire season.
Let me ask you this. When you and I have talked in the past, we've talked about the fact that the guys who play with you always make the point that no matter how good you are or how good people think you are as a player, you're even better as a person, which is incredibly high praise. How much does it mean to you to be balanced like that and to have a positive impact off the field as well?
It means a lot, because you think about the guys that you looked at growing up and you thought that, you know, they were some of the best role models there could be. And I think the biggest thing is you want to make sure you're the same guy on and off the field. You know, there are younger children I look up to. There are kids that are saying, hey, Jonathan Taylor is the role model. I want to make sure that on and off the field, I'm doing the things that I say that I'm doing, because I know that I want to be a good example for those kids and be someone that they can look up to.
So finally, have you allowed yourself to imagine what it's going to feel like to hear your name called at the draft and to know where you're going to be playing next season?
Yeah, it's going to be a different kind of feeling, like something you never felt before, just because you had all the anticipation. You look at the free agency and you look at, you know, now that the combine is over and pro day is over with, you kind of look at mock drafts before. You were kind of blocking out all the noise and trying to focus up and know where you're going to go. But when you finally hear that name called and you know exactly where you're going to be, and you're going to be filled with joy, but you're also going to be ready to work. So it's going to be a fun time.
Jonathan, one last thought. I was in the suite for the Rutgers game, and I saw Ron Dayne, and I could see how much it meant to him to be back there. I've told you before that my son started at Wisconsin. You know what's really interesting? The kids, when they came back from school because of the coronavirus and they now know they're not going back to school, they were all really sad to know that that was the end of their freshman year. They were not going back to the dorms. They weren't going to see their friends again after spring break like they ordinarily would have. You know, time will tell as you go forward, but do you feel like Madison is a place that you will go back to time and time again?
Without a doubt, Madison is another home. Anywhere that I call home is somewhere that I would definitely love to be involved with. Same thing, like back home in Salem, New Jersey, that's a home. And now Madison, Wisconsin is another home. So that's always a place I'll hold dear to my heart, and I'll always be trying to get back to Madison and just enjoy those vibes.
That's great. The numbers are absolutely amazing. First player in FBS history to rush for 6,000 yards in just 3 seasons. A 2-time Doak Walker Award winner, 2-time unanimous first-team All-American, and the NFL draft gets underway on April 23rd. Jonathan, I appreciate you very much, and I always appreciate the conversation. Good luck with that, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate you having me on today.
At calling. Let's find out. Geoff in Lincoln. What's up, Geoff?
What's up, Pimp? How's it going?
Good, dude. How about you? Is this really you?
Hey, good. It's really me.
Okay.
And I just had something I wanted to tell you. I know these are tough times, so I just want to let you know that my name's actually Jeff, not Geoff. You've been mispronouncing it for quite a while.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Geoff, I appreciate you calling and trying to set me straight. And I'm not saying that I'm always right, because I'm not. In fact, I'm often wrong. And when I am wrong, I own it. And I'm accountable for it. And I'm responsible for it, which is one of the very basic premises of this entire show. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to screw something up. Just own it. Be accountable. Be responsible. Apologize. Mean it. And then we keep moving. In your case, Geoff, it's none of those things. Did you just call me up and say, hey, Rome, my name is not Geoff, it's Jeff? I wanted to correct you.
It's not Ryan, it's Ryan.
It's not Jeff, it's Geoff.
It's not Ryan, it's Ryan.
You know how I know that, Geoff? Because I'm looking at the way your name is spelled. G-E-O-F-F. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this and turn this into a big thing or a big bit. Your name is Geoff. Obviously. I'm reading it the way it's spelled. If your name was Jeff, it would be spelled J-E-F-F. Hey, Geoff, what do you say you take it up with your parents and not me?
Good night!